So welcome to this afternoon's meditation class. This is the ongoing class. Those who have come for the first time, or the first couple of times, the introduction to meditation class is to the right over there. This is the ongoing class. And in the ongoing class, after 15 minutes of introduction, then we do a 45-minute meditation, followed by any questions which you have about the meditation. And in particular, when we start our meditation, sometimes people get restless. We start thinking. And the reason we start thinking when we meditate is only because that it's our reaction to pain and discomfort. If you are getting to a certain part of meditation where you start to feel happy, enjoying it, then why think about things? Why get restless? Why want to move? Why want to get up and do something else? Because you're having a very happy time. So it's that happiness which comes up in meditation is almost essential, you know, to be able to sit for long periods of time. Otherwise, it's just endurance, just force. Yeah, you can do that. You know, that I often mention the simile of those guards in Buckingham Palace who sit, they stand perfectly straight for 45 minutes or an hour. And even though the tourists come up and try and photograph them and poke them and do stuff, still, they sit perfectly straight. But that's just through force, through willpower. But to be able to sit perfectly still, you know, through happiness means you're happy to be here. It becomes almost like effortless. So, important when we meditate to bring up that joy and that happiness, which is one of the reasons why I keep encouraging people to get into a beautiful posture, a comfortable position. So you can, great, you've got those little stools, chairs, leaning back against the wall, cushions, more cushions. We've got heaps of cushions up there, so you can get a whole lot if you wish, and put this big bed around and sit on them. Because whatever it makes it comfortable for you, that's really important. However, it doesn't matter what you do with chairs and cushions, even if you bring, like, you know, your personal armchair here, you know, a lazy boy, and just press this button and the thing goes out this way and that way, still, you can only get so comfortable through your posture. Then comes, it's a bit hot, it's tired, it's aching. There's always something in our bodies. So, you know, 2 weeks ago, after the New Year's, I was really tired, exhausted. So I was just taking a week or two by myself in my cave, a retreat, and just feeling the body was just really aching and tired. But, sort of, what do you do with that? You just sit there and be with it. Important thing, just to be with it. Don't try and get somewhere. Don't try and force it to be something different. In other words, don't get any negativity up. The negativity, the ill will in Buddhist meditation is called the second of the five hindrances. Vayapada is ill will. I don't want this. I want to, you know, this boring old breath. I want to get nimittas. I want to get the lights and the jhanas. I just want to get this beautiful bliss states. I want to get this. I want to get that. You can see that is like the ill will. That is what the problem is. So instead, seeing it's too hot, it's too cold, I wish somebody would, you know, turn the heater up or turn the cold up or whatever it is. You know, that whatever it is, look, you know, the reason I prefer it cold, you know, if you are too cold, you can always put something on. But if you're too hot, you can't take anything off. Not to be decent in this place, because remember, the camera's on. So you can't strip off in this place. So, but what you can do is just, you know, try and keep cool, and it will never be perfect for you, so you just learn how to be. And every now and again, I remember an occasion once when I was traveling, and it was in Thailand. And I don't know what you eat, it's always par for the course, sometimes you get tummy ache. You know, well, now you look at it, talk about health and safety regulations, those monasteries would never pass, not once. You know, the sort of the dirt and the hygiene there was almost non-existent. But, you know, you used to get a strong tummy, but every now and again it was too much, you got tummy ache. And I remember just having to wait for an hour or 2 hours until the next bus or whatever it was, taking me to the next destination, really feeling sick, but just staying with it. Just sitting down, you know, feeling inside your tummy, but you couldn't do anything, which is great. You just stayed there and just focus on the discomfort. Just be with it, but not with just endurance, not trying to get rid of it, not trying to escape from it or find a place where you could be where that pain wasn't. You really go into it. And just going into any form of discomfort, just being with it as totally as you possibly can, leave it. It sucks. It's unpleasant. But one thing really happens after a little while. You stay with it, stay there long enough, and the ache, the pain, tends to disappear by itself. It gets less and less and less and less when you're not trying to get rid of it. Because all that's happening is understanding. It's a very basic Buddhist teaching. Well, maybe basic, but it's a very important one. There's the two types of discomfort. The first is the physical. Now, the actual ache, the pain, the heat, the cold. That's the one part which you can't do really much about. It's never exactly the right temperature. It's always, you know, a bit too hot, but it's never totally quiet. It's never exactly the food which I want when I want it. It's always never just enough rest or too much rest or whatever. You know, the body, it's never find the best part. So that part you can never do much about. You're going to get aches, sick, too hot, too cold, want to go to the toilet, whatever it is. But the other part of the pain is the reaction part of the pain. I don't want this. I want it to be different. I want to get rid of this. I want to escape. And that is the part which allows meditation to happen no matter how you feel. Because that you can do everything about. In the suttas, the teaching of the Buddha, he called out the two darts or the two arrows, the physical and the emotional response. One, you know, you can't do much about. The other one, you can do everything about. And it really helps because you've got an ache, a pain, too hot, too cold, tired, whatever. Just be with it. In other words, don't add with your emotional reaction. Oh, I don't want this. I feel so yucky. Oh, why do I always have to feel like this? Ooh, I feel so tired. Ooh, so much ache, so much pain. There's always something going on. What you can do is just be with it. Part of life. It's where I always say there's three things you can always do. Always. Make peace, be kind, and be gentle. You can't always be free of aches and pains, but you can always make peace, be kind, be gentle. So it's hot. I just make peace with the heat. Be kind, which is open the door of your heart this moment. Be gentle, which you don't react. When you don't react, you find something really weird happens. After a while, you know, you don't feel the heat and the cold, the aches and pains. Where the heck are they gone? You put a bit of mindfulness there, it's still there, still hot, still aching, still hurts. But you've taken away the importance of it by not making a big fuss and bother about it. You make peace, you're kind to it, you're gentle with it. It just tends to not be important anymore. It's one of the reasons why there are some people who have chronic pain, and after a while they get used to it. Weird to say, but it's just part of their life. And they smile, happy, just like you wouldn't know just what they're actually going through. They don't know because they don't pay too much attention to it. What they're paying attention to is the other part, the emotional response. So we can actually, when we're meditating, we can actually put our attention on one of those two things. Our emotional response. Are we making peace, being kind, being gentle? Are we trying to get rid of stuff, trying to get somewhere else, trying to go somewhere else, being discontent? Are we looking at the making peace, our emotional response, or are we looking at the feeling, the pain? The ache, the heat, the cold, the noise, people burping, whatever it is. If you're looking at the wrong place, of course, meditation never happens. The emotional response, after a while, that you get this energy coming up. You're alive. You're happy. You're joyful. And it just comes not because you want it. It's because you're always making peace, being kind, being gentle, focusing on what's really important. Not on the body, not on the complaining, not on why does this have to happen, why just come all this way, you know, to have some meditation. Really looking forward to this afternoon, I get tummy ache. Oh, people cough. Oh, that there's a police car outside. Instead of that negativity, that ill will, we learn how to be at peace. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Now, one of the reasons why this happens, it's one of those teachings I keep banging on about, is that when you use up your mental energy with doing, with wriggling, writhing, struggling, striving, trying to get your body just nice, trying to think, okay, as soon as Ajahn Brahm closes his eyes, I'm going to creep up here and I'm going to grab the aircon and get it exactly how I want it. So I'm going to put this under here somewhere so you can't get it. I'm sure there's a spare somewhere. So instead of trying to manipulate, think, plan, because that is the stuff which causes the problems. Instead, just let it go, let it be. It's good enough, you're not going to die. If it's too hot, wonderful. Well, you can sweat and lose some toxins. It's wonderful. Free sauna, no extra charge. And if it's really cold, excellent, because when you're cold, you tend to extend your life in cold weather. That's why you put things in the refrigerator so they don't go off. So if you think you're being cryogenically frozen here, if you're sitting too close to the aircon, wonderful. But anyway, all that's really happening here is the changing the mind state, not the body state. And what happens because you're not doing things, the energy in your brain is not being used up. Which means that after a short while, all that wasted energy goes into your mindfulness. You become happy. The mind becomes, this is that happiness which comes from an energized mind. And of course, most people's minds are, struggle to get here, working on the committee, what else? Looking after all of the caretaking, having to deal with people at work, I don't know what else you've got in life, but there's plenty of causes in our life. So, but now, instead, we just don't even think about it, don't worry about it, don't do anything about that at all. And instead, we can learn how to relax and let go and be. When we do that, energy of our mind, mindfulness becomes more powerful. And this is where anything you see starts to become beautiful, delightful, joyful. That's the energized mindfulness, the happiness of meditation. And of course, then, you know, you feel the wind of the aircon. And it's just like this beautiful breeze just blowing over your body. It's a bit chilly, but oh, it's just so wonderful. Just the feeling of being alive and feeling that. You feel the sound of the, what can you say, of somebody just banging the doors. Wow, just the bang of a door. It's an amazing experience. Just a bang or whatever. We hear the aircraft over the top of us. And it's amazing sounds. Because when you're mindful and happy, you can see the beauty in almost anything. And it really is true. And your body starts to feel really, really beautiful. Delightful. Weird. You start, it's aching, tired, hot, indigestion or whatever. But after a while, if you just make peace, be kind, be gentle, the energy comes up and it feels good. And then when you have happiness in the body, just sitting here, it's really comfortable. And people get the feeling they can sit here for hours. Just so comfortable, so happy just being here. And then if you want to go into your breathing, into the emotional world, it's just so easy. It's just that entry point into really deep, good meditation. What I used to call the pivot point is just the happiness, the joy. Where does the happiness come from? It comes from just being still. No ill will. You have to endure for a little while. And again, simile, always find hard to have similes, but that simile I try to develop about sitting down on a hard, like just sitting outside on that wooden little bench outside underneath which your shoes go. You sit down on that, it's hard. It's not that comfortable at first, but you sit there long enough, and after a while it sort of warms up. It becomes comfortable. If you sit there long enough, anything becomes really comfy. You sit still with whatever you experience right now, your body starts to become comfy. And then it means the body relaxes and it gets even more cozy and comfy. And you can really get into some nice deep meditation. The joy which comes up. Just a little bit of persistence. A little bit of endurance. Just not reacting to the difficulties, the pains, the disturbances of meditation. Just staying there. Making peace, being kind, being gentle. And then you get your energy up. Then you want to watch the breath. You want to sort of do metta or vipassana or whatever you want to do. It's easy. You've got the energy, the focus. So easy to do. Okay. So, let's give it a try. There's opportunities for questions and complaints afterwards. And just, if people are really desperate, I'll close my eyes. Okay. Now close your eyes. I usually lead the meditation first 5, 10, 15 minutes or something, and then just be quiet so I can enjoy the meditation and you can just carry on. You close your eyes. I know some people say, oh, leave your eyes open. Oh, just, it's too much distraction. I prefer closing my eyes. If I could close my ears, I'd do that too. And when your eyes are closed, start to feel your body. And feel this. The ache, heaviness, the body, warmth. There's always some little ache or pain there somewhere. If I didn't know how to deal with it, I'd be fidgeting all the time. So, get myself into what I recognize as a reasonably good posture. And then I really get into adjusting my body. Now I just focus just on my legs, and my toes, and my feet, ankles, calves, knees, thighs. I feel a whole lot. It's like I'm saying, how are you guys? Anything you need? They tell me I should adjust the posture. There we go, it's better. So, again, you never just believe what's the best posture, what some guru or great master or mistress, keep it gender neutral, tell you. You feel it for yourself. You all come and see. I feel my posture with my mind. It's called awareness. You really get to know how your body is positioned. And then, if I need to move it, I will. This is not an endurance test. This is a part of compassion and kindness. Sensitivity. So I'm so sensitive to my legs, because if I look after them, they'll be quite happy for the next 45 minutes. If I try and control them, tell them what they should be doing, rather than listen to what they need, then I find I'll get in aches and pains. Once I find my legs pretty good, not the best, not perfect, but okay. Then go to my butt, feel the pressure of my body on his big muscles. Just fidget till they're comfy. Sometimes if you're sitting on a stool, sometimes you need to move the stool closer to your knees, sometimes a bit further away to get it right. With a cushion, sometimes I'm too much on the edge, sometimes I need to sort of pull the cushion closer into my knees. Get the right place. It's worth it, putting in the time, putting in the care. To the back. If your back is not in a good position, that is a sure cause of discomfort. So you check the posture of your back. You get to know your muscles and your bones. And they get to know you too, so they can work together. Sometimes you're on a chair, you lean back. Sometimes you lean forward. Sometimes you curve your back, sometimes just keep it straight. You find out. Trial and error with mindfulness and kindness. You get the best position for your back. So feel those feelings and sensations. Don't go wandering off into fantasies yet, or ever. Just really feel the body. It's important for you. And with that, just your hands. Just how are your hands positioned? Where are they right now? Is that good enough? Even asking those questions. Asking a question is a great way of developing mindfulness in the area that is most important to you. Questions focus mindfulness, they direct it. And your shoulders as well, nice and relaxed. Now, as soon as you become aware of that area, that's the time you can find some problems. If you don't look, you don't see. Until the problem gets so bad, it causes you a lot of difficulty. So you catch it early. Checking it out, make sure your shoulders are nice and relaxed. Your neck is just relaxed. I'm just moving my head around, just stretching a couple of muscles there just to make sure that the neck is not going to be in pain. Throat, if you need to swallow, you need to cough, most welcome. We don't force things, we don't suppress, we let things be. And then up to your head. You feel the itchiness of the face in the hot weather. My face feels a bit itchy. You feel the heat. And you relax. As soon as you're mindful, you're aware of any feeling there. The next thing, learning how to relax it, is quite simple. Trial and error, you soon learn just how not to keep pushing and pulling and stretching and putting your muscles in your face under stress. Sometimes I imagine that like a sponge which is squashed, and I just take off the pressure, and the sponge becomes loose and fluffy and light, just like muscles on my face. My whole body, part by part, meticulous, carefully relaxing it. At the same time, establishing mindfulness, awareness, and the kindness, relaxing things, opening things up. And for those of you who like to heal parts of your body, go to some part of your body which is really irritating more than most. Could be tummy, headache, irritating throat, whatever. You feel that part of the body. Feel your mindfulness. Zoom in on it. Until that's all that you can experience, just this feeling, irritations in your body, or pain, or ache. And see what relaxes it. Letting it be, or trying to get rid of it. You soon find what relaxes that irritation or pain. You're aware, it gives you trial and error, you soon find out how. The cause. You find the cause of relaxation is kindness. Opening the door of your heart to that irritation or pain, that ache, that heat. And it gets nice and easy, open, peaceful. If you have any injuries, any sicknesses, this is really powerful to be able to ease, get beyond the stress. Obviously, it's usually fear, control, stress, that cycle. Which really twists and squashes and messes up your body. Everything just is wide, expansive, free. And I usually indulge by just enjoying a body which is really relaxed. Then up to my emotional world, my mind. Look at the old peaceometer. How irritated are you? Anxious, disturbed, agitated? Or how peaceful, content, happy? Be honest. give it a number from 1 to 10. 1, really peaceful. 10, agitated. Now you are looking at the peaceometer. Aware. Next, what do you need to do? What attitude of mind to bring that needle of the peaceometer closer to deep, deep peace and stillness? You're not watching the breath or the body or loving kindness, whatever. What you're doing right now is going to the heart of the matter. How peaceful are you? What causes peace in the mind? You soon learn. Same thing which relaxes your body causes peace in the mind. Take away the stress, the pulling and the pushing and the worrying, carrying burdens from the past or anxiety about the future, all that stuff which pushes and struggles and strives and stretches and squashes and compresses and contains, imprisons. Instead, you're letting go, opening the door of your heart to freedom, just to be. No past, no future, just being. As your mind starts to feel peaceful, just stay there. Stay there until, because the mind, the brain doesn't do much work, no need to have a commentary, no need to have a counter argument or a philosophical debate about what's the right meditation or not. Just be silent by being here. This is good enough. Stay here. No ill will. And soon you'll find the joy comes up. Naturally. Just coming because you're conserving your mental energies, not struggling, letting things be and recharging till you're bright. And then, watching the breath, whatever, so easy. I'm now going to be quiet now. Getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? What's it like inside the body, inside your mind? How relaxed is the body? And how free is the mind? Freedom from wanting, not freedom of wanting things. Content, at ease. I will now ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. Questions from the audience here, first of all, is okay. Well, just while you're winding up, that's somebody reminded me last night in the talk, and some people listened to the Friday night talk and Saturday afternoon. I started a story, but I never finished it, about the young Thai boy who failed grade one at school, and so he had to repeat grade one at school in Thailand, in the village. And he failed it the second time. 3 times he failed grade one. And that's an amazing achievement to be able to do. Grade 10s, 11s, 12s we're doing a year, but to grade one at school. And so they thought he was just so difficult to learn anything. It's a waste of time teaching him how to plough the fields or look after the water buffalo and plant rice. So the only alternative for him was to ordain him as a novice monk. Not all novice monks started out that way. And even just with all the kindness and compassion of these monks that tried to teach him some chanting, couldn't learn even the chanting. Even simple things like Namo Tassa. As I remember the story, he could learn Namo, but the second word Tassa, by the time he got to Tassa, what was that first word again? And so after a couple of years of patiently trying to teach this young man how to meditate, how to chant, the last resort, even the old monk said, no, this is too hard for me. The last resort was the forest monasteries. Well, that really is where I come from. And even though he couldn't chant, he couldn't actually learn much theory, his mind was just so pure and peaceful. They taught him how to meditate, and straight away he got into the very deep meditations. Can't remember his name, I should have done. This was over 43 years ago when I heard this story. But anyway, that he became fully enlightened, a great meditator. And just the psychic things about meditation, that to be able to do the chanting, which all monks have to do somewhere along the line, that he could recall a previous life when he had learned the chanting. So when he was doing any chanting, he would actually just connect with his previous life and just draw the chanting from there, because in this life he just couldn't learn it at all. Interesting. So I always say that. It's just one of the reasons why, if you can't really think that much, you are so lucky. You'd be a great meditator. Who knows? And it also shows us how really simple it is to meditate. But somehow or other, we're always taught to assess, to judge, to name, to give it some sort of a commentary. That which we call thinking. And sometimes it's okay to think, but it's wonderful if you can stop thinking for a little while to let things be and be still, be peaceful. It's amazing just how you can get into these incredible deep meditations. Anyway, so first of all, one from Penang and one from no location stated, but I think I know this fellow, and from Norway. So first of all, from Penang, regarding the peaceometer, why do we measure our peacefulness from meditation? I thought we should be content with whatever is the state of our mind. What it really is, the measuring the peaceometer, it is what we call the skillful means. It is like using just our background, you know, our cultures. We're always used to measuring things. And when we'd say, give it a number from 1 to 10, all that really means is you're focusing on, you know, what we mean by peaceometer. Like, you know, how happy are you? Give it a number from 1 to 10. I don't care what that number is, but what's important is you're looking at your happiness level. It's a skillful means just to, you know, to for you to focus on the right thing. So, all it is, content with whatever is the state of our mind, yes, but to get to that contentment, we've got to find out what is what we mean by the state of our mind, even what is our mind. And this is one of the reasons why that try and encourage that when you have a mind, what actually is it? How can you really get your concepts around what a mind is? And just use a simile like a garden. What is a garden? You know a garden because it's got flowers and bushes and grass and trees and stuff. A garden is defined by what exists, you know, in that garden. In the same way here, we've got a mind. A mind is defined by what was inside of it. What makes up a mind? It is, you know, your kindness, your compassion, your ill will, your fear, your control, your thoughts, your emotions, your peace or agitation. That was what makes up the thing which we call the mind. So you don't actually have this philosophical idea, what is the mind as it exists? Yeah, you know that love exists, kindness, forgiveness exists, fear exists, anxiety exists. You know those things exist. That's the mind. That's, you know, with the all that stuff, that's the all the plants and the flora and fauna which live in your mind. So anyway, the peaceometer is one of the most important parts of that garden. Just, you know, how peaceful are you? How agitated? If you look at that, measure it to start off with, but then leave it alone. And measure it at the end. The reason you measure it at the end, I would say, well, how do you feel? How peaceful are you? It's because that, at the very end, that gives you a lot of encouragement that this meditation actually works. You feel relaxed. Yes, I feel really good. Wow, I feel, you know, much better. Of course you measure. And how can I break free of parental verbal abuse that is haunting my mind? This is, obviously, this is not from Australia, because domestic abuse is not just between spouses and partners. Sometimes it's parents and children. So anyway, that's actually an interesting part. I don't think there's all the news over in Australia hasn't really mentioned that, parents and children. But anyway, parental abuse. Parental verbal abuse is haunting my mind. Like, first of all, is, you know, the before you have forgiveness, is understanding. Sometimes it may be that your parents are going through a difficult time for one reason or another, financially, or their sort of emotional bond or peace with one another could be the problem. So first of all, in order to lessen the problem, you always like soften the problem, give it kindness, compassion, don't just try and get rid of it, by finding, you know, some excuse. And if you've got to stretch it somehow, some excuse to actually to forgive them. In other words, when you are judging your parents, which you are doing here, is be the defense attorney, not the prosecutor. Defense attorney tries to find some reason, you know, to get the person, you know, off the charge. Oh, you know, they had post-traumatic stress. They're going through depression. They're going through a difficult time in their life. Oh, whatever it is, financial problems or whatever. But if you actually find some reason to excuse them, it makes it much easier. And the old story goes with it very quickly. I wanted it to be translated. That's right, when I gave a talk in Triple Wisdom Hall in Penang. And all those talks always have to be translated into Chinese. I have great fun asking them to translate when somebody actually is shouting at somebody else in a little story. That's the story about the guy who had the afternoon off work, and his wife said, "Oh, darling, I need some eggs to cook the dinner. Could you mind going and get the eggs for me?" "Oh, certainly, darling. I've never been to the market before. How do I go there?" So she gave him a map, gave him a basket, gave him the money, told him to go to the market for eggs. And as soon as he got to this market, this guy came up to him and said, "You're so ugly, you've got a face like a camel, back of a camel that is, and you smell like dog poo." You know that, and it was just so offensive. You know, it really made Mr. Trump look like just a very sweet, kind gentleman. But anyway, it was so offensive, this fellow. And the husband never knew the fellow. So he was so upset, he turned around and went home. Wife said, "Why'd you come home?" "Look, I was abused by this person right in front of everybody in the market. I'd never met him before. I never want to go to places like that before. It's terrible. They abuse you for no reason whatsoever." And that's when the wife said, "Oh, it's him." Because that poor boy had an accident when he was young. Hit his head. He's brain damaged. That's all. He abuses everybody. And the poor fellow can never get a job. You know, he'll never find a nice partner in life. They never go to school. He just hangs around the market. He abuses me sometimes. Well, much worse than what he told you. And that's just his brain damage, that's all. And as soon as he realized that there's nothing wrong with the husband, it was just a poor fellow who had an accident. So all his anger disappeared, and his wife said, "Darling, I still need those eggs." So off he went back to get the eggs. He abused again, but this time it never mattered, because the parents had brain damage. They must have hit their head that day. There's some reason there. So don't take it personal. And if you're verbal abuse, then just find a reason, some excuse, even if you're really sort of, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit, you know, just stretching, you know, what's feasible, just maybe. And that means our poor parents, what they had to go through, which means you can forgive them. And anyway, the next thing is, anyways, you're haunting your mind. Do you really believe in ghosts haunting you? So we learn how to let it go. Because it's your parents, you love them, you can't escape from them, but what you can do, you be kind to them. What was that other little story? I love this little story. This is actually anyone who knows Greek philosophy. In ancient Greece, there was this one fellow, he became quite famous for this little anecdote, that when he was being trained by his teacher in ancient Greece, the teacher would teach all the students everything, arithmetic, writing, you name it. So the teacher would teach them everything. But whenever he made a mistake, this young student, the teacher would shout at him and scold him. And every time he shouted and scolded at his teacher every time the teacher shouted or scolded at the student for making a mistake, the teacher would charge him an extra $10. Because there's a lot of energy and effort wasted to scold someone and shout at them. So you pay for that, use the pays, Margaret Thatcher. So every time that he made a mistake and was shouted at by his teacher, he got an extra bill for another $10. And when he eventually graduated, when he went to work, then his boss would shout at him and scold him, and he would only laugh. And his people would say, "Well, why are you just laughing when people shout at you and scold you?" He said, "Oh, because when I was a student, I had to pay for this. Now I get it for free." I thought that was a really nice little attitude over there. So you get scolded by your parents, verbal abuse, but you don't have to pay for it. Yay, for free. And maybe that's what we should do at schools. Anyone who teaches here, anytime you actually do shout at your students,
charge them for it.
And there's a lot of energy to shout at a person. You know, it shouldn't come free. Free speech, but not free anger. Anyway, whatever, here we go. So anyway, that's how you can break free of it. And anyway, just poor parents. They go through a hard time. So just let it go. And from Norway, could you please give us some wisdom on the fifth precept regarding consumption of marijuana? I find my use of marijuana to be peaceful. The precept forbids drugs that lead to heedlessness. If you find any evidence base from the medical profession, even a small amount of marijuana, it is illegal if you're driving a car in many jurisdictions, and the reason is because it does impede your heedfulness. The evidence is really strong there. Yeah, if you have alcohol, sometimes alcohol can calm you down a little bit. But it takes away your heedfulness. You're not aware anymore. Same with marijuana. So what happens is it affects your bloodstream. If it's for other reasons, you know, such as medicinal marijuana, it's just like any other opioids which you use for pain control. That's another thing altogether. But if it is just, you know, for some emotional, mental idea of peace, you're losing your awareness. As every doctor knows, which is one of the reasons why if you take marijuana, you're not heedful at all. You're not aware. And even in many, like in the mines in the north of Western Australia, you know, they always have to have those drug testing because, you know, you're driving very heavy machinery, very dangerous stuff. And if you're not really so on top of of your game, if you're not really alert and aware, it's so easy to pull the wrong lever, press the wrong button, and then somebody's dead. It's not a small thing. So everybody knows that consumption of marijuana does mess around with your mind. And one monk I knew years and years and years ago, that, you know, he was amazing. He was actually a drug smuggler. This was about 4 years ago, 45 years ago. And he decided to try and do something. And he was with Ajahn Chah for about 2 or 3 years. You know, you could observe him. He was very kind, though, obviously not taking any drugs or alcohol. But it took about 3 or 4 years to clear through his system and his mind to become sort of clear again. And then before then, it was just in a fog. So sometimes we don't realize what it does to us because we get used to it. That it is. So there's a reason why those drugs are concerned, are against the fifth precept. And it is, you know, because it does mess around with your mind. When it gets to be the mindfulness and the happiness, you don't need those supports of drugs. All one really needs, as I was saying today, is actually to learn how to meditate, learn how to let go, not because, you know, you have no choice, because that choice has been dulled out, numbed away by the drugs. But you have a very clear mind, very clear choice, which means you're peaceful, but you're also very alert and very energized and very happy. Always. The last little anecdote. Years ago when I was over in UK, we were doing a little ceremony in a prison, installing a Buddha statue in one of the open prisons, and we did a little circumambulation around the Buddha statue. There was a couple of prisoners, they were waiting for the free dinner, which was coming afterwards, supplied by the Thai community, who just wanted to celebrate a Buddha statue going in one of the prisons in UK. And they were hanging around watching, and I saw them looking at me, big smile on my face. And at the corner of my eye, I saw these two prisoners pointing at me and say, "Oh, that monk's on the gear." In other words, I was on drugs. And the only reason they said that is because they couldn't understand how you could be so happy without sort of, you know, some sort of substance. And of course, there's no drugs there in my system. You're just happy out of inspiration and joy. You don't need those drugs. So, be peaceful. peaceful but dull peacefulness. That's what Ajahn Chah used to say, the peacefulness of a water buffalo. The water buffalo is going into the fields in the morning. They look so peaceful, nothing really bothered them because they were just dull. You know, some of the most peaceful things I've ever seen in life is corpses. They're dead. No wonder they're peaceful. But it's not really the aware peace. So, awareness with peace is really important. Okay, that's, the Buddha made that very clear. So there's a reason behind that, and that's my understanding of it. So, any comments or questions from here? Messes with your mind. You don't want to mess with your mind. You just want to free the mind. Be peaceful from the mind. So a mind which is free of wanting. You don't want this, you want that. You're just free. Any more questions? Going. Gone. Okay, okay. Hee hee hee. So now we need to do our bowing, which I forgot last night.